Soul Talk is a podcast dedicated to making space for Latinx storytellers and content creators across all media to chat about their art, experiences, and culture. As a branch of the Soul Project, Soul Talk welcomes you to the Green Room.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Season 3 of Soul Talk. My name is Joey Reyes. My pronouns are they, them, theirs, and I am the associate producer at the Soul Project, and I am joined here with my illustrious co-host.
Hello, this is David Mendizabal. I am the Associate Artistic Director of the Soul Project. I am using he, they pronouns, and I am so excited to be here for Season 3, Episode 1 of Soul Talk. It's been a minute, Joey, since we've like kikied and kai-kied on Zoom on our podcast.
It has certainly been a minute. I'm still like shocked at how quickly this year has gone by, this 2021. Like it feels like yesterday, like I was over at my friends in a very small New Year's Eve gathering at the time, pre-vaccines. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's just been such a whirlwind of continuous, you know, pivoting. I feel like
it's almost 2022. I mean, not like blink and it'll be here. Yeah, and that's just wild. It's really wild just to how fast time has flown and how long it's been since we've gotten to catch up with folks who are actually making theater.
Yeah.
Versus catching up with folks who are trying to figure out what it means to make theater when we can't gather.
I know.
So it'll be exciting to hear what's going on, to hear like how people are navigating this shift, this, you know, return to a deeply uncertain moment. Mm-hmm. And just a return, you know, getting back to work. Like, what does that look like? What does that mean? How does that feel? You know, what is the work now, mm-hmm, moving forward? So it'll be an exciting episode that we're kicking off today.
Yes.
Got the illustrious El Maestro Luis Alfaro, who is the master writer at the Public Theater, who we saw with Oedipus El Rey, mm-hmm, produced at the Public Theater with Soul Project. And Joey, I think you've got Luis's bio, so you can give us a little more intel on Luis Alfaro and his illustrious career.
Absolutely. And I'll do my nice little NPR voice for this. Mm. Luis Alfaro was born and raised in downtown Los Angeles. He is Center Theater Group's newest associate artistic director. He is a Chicano writer known for his work in poetry, theater, short fiction, performance, and journalism. He is the recipient of a MacArthur Foundation Fellowship, popularly known as the Genius Grant, the Pan America Laura Pels International Foundation Theater Award for a Master Dramatist, United States Artist Fellowship, and Ford Foundation's Art of Change Fellowship, among others. Luis spent 6 seasons as the Mellon Playwright in Residence at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival from 2013 to 2019, a member of the Playwrights Ensemble at Chicago's Victory Gardens Theater from 2013 to 2020, a resident artist at the Mark Taper Forum from 1995 to 2005, and has been associated with the Ojai Playwrights Conference since 2002. His plays and performances include Electricidad, Oedipus el Rey, Mojada, Delano, and Body of Faith. Luis spent over 2 decades in the Los Angeles poetry and performance arts communities. He's an associate professor with tenure at the University of Southern California, otherwise known as USC. His recent book, The Greek Trilogy of Luis Alfaro, was released by Methuen Drama this past year and is this year's winner of the prestigious London Hellenic Prize for 2020.
Woo! Yes! Ooh, take a breath! Take a breath while you read that one.
Oh my gosh. You know, it's so wild in just a matter. I'm also originally from Southern California, and as someone, you know, I didn't get into theater until high school, but very quickly became known, like just in my own like research of trying to find people, artists or whoever that like reflected, you know, my experience as like a Mexican human being growing up in Southern California. Luis Alfaro was definitely someone that popped up at the time, and you know, just keeping track of his work throughout the years, and then finally getting to this place where I can like call him a friend is so wild. And to be able to just like you know, have those moments of being, of talking about those very like specific, you know, when you like find your people and you get to talk about those like specific, like, oh, that restaurant over on that street corner in Pico Rivera, you know, like that sort of thing. Like I remember having that moment with him the first time a couple of years ago. And it was just like, I don't know. It's just so, and he's just so, so full of joy and such, so full of energy. And I'm so excited about this new appointment at Center Theatre Group.
I mean, just, it's, you know, about time, and also what an incredible and important position to take, especially at that theater, and someone who is, as you heard in his bio, just like of and for the community, and what impact, what seismic impact he can make in the seeds that he can plant while he's there. So it's really exciting. As we go into the episode, I do have a little disclaimer. So, you know, as we're recording these podcasts, we do record things out of order. So we are recording this intro after having already had the incredible conversation with Luis Alfaro. And, you know, it's been a minute since we've been at this thing, and technology is not always on our side. And so all of my audio from our recording has been lost in the internet. So what you're going to hear following this is an edited conversation. You will hear everything that Luisa said, everything that Joey said, and you'll hear a whole lot of stuff that I'm adding in after the fact. Yes. So hopefully it doesn't throw off the conversation too much, because, you know, Luisa's the gifts that he has to give, the nuggets of inspiration and just mind-blowing inspiration that he has to share are just things that we couldn't not share with y'all, especially after recording the episode. So, you know, technology be damned sometimes, but we've got to share it with the people. So
absolutely. And I can laugh at it now, but in the moment I was having a heart attack.
realizing
that like your work has just been lost. But, you know, yes, I won't say okay. anymore. I'll let the
no
interview
one
speak
is here
for itself.
To listen to me.
Oh my gosh. And with that, please enjoy our interview with Luis Alfaro. Hello, Luis, and welcome to Soul Talk.
Hello, it's so wonderful to be here.
Hi, Luis. First of all, congratulations on your new appointment as the Associate Artistic Director at CTG. I think we all were screaming out of joy at this announcement. It was like a long time coming, and so really, congratulations. What an incredible glow up.
Oh, I'm feeling the love in such a big way, to be honest. Like, you know, not even, maybe people were talking smack about me, but like, whoever, somebody probably like took it away from my Facebook. But, you know, but I have to say, it's been amazing to get that love, because for me, it feels like something sort of natural and something kind of like, you know, in terms of my activism, it felt like just coming back into something. I knew I had to do something. I knew I was feeling very frustrated. And if we have a gift, let us use the gift, right? So it felt like that.
Totally. Let us use our gifts and get out of our way. And you have a long relationship with CTG. So this is also a homecoming for you.
What was funny was when on the first day that I met the staff, you know, I said, it's really great to be back here and to be hired by the man who fired me, right?
So, yes.
So like, it's so complicated in that way, right? But, you know, I think what was really great was not just to talk about, like, you know, 1995, I started there as a staff member and did a lot of work, right, with the Latino Theater Initiative. But really, it was when I was a kid, the first four plays that I saw in the theater, you guys are not going to believe this, it was Pacific Overture, Stephen Sondheim's, the first national tour. It was the first national tour for colored girls who have considered suicide when the rainbow is enough. It was the world premiere of Zoot Suit. That's how old I am. And it was the first national tour of The Wiz with Andre DeShields. How crazy is that, you know?
That is incredible.
So it felt like, you know, natural in that way that I had been an artist and I had performed and then come back and worked. And then, you know, in 2005, the new artistic director, Michael Ritchie, who was my boss now, had, you know, sort of asked me to move on. And so it's such a trip to have come back now and said, Michael, what are we doing? What is going on? We have to do something, right? And for him to say, to give him his props, for him to say, okay, come in, talk to me. What's up, right? I thought was very open of him and very brave because I was really honest. And I came in armed, you know, I came in armed with the list of what I thought were priorities and projects. So I was like, listen, I don't want to come and like join the staff. I have a job. I teach at USC, right? I have a job and I don't need to do this. But what I do need to do is make change. So how are we going to do that? And, you know, he was like, tell me, how are we going to do it? And I said, here it is. Here's the slate, right? And so I kind of feel like, you know, it made me feel like I wanted to call my friends and say, call your local theater, set up a meeting, show up with your slate of stuff to do. One of the interesting things, aspects for me was, if there was anything that came out well from the pandemic, which we're still in, was that, you know, this opened a door, right? And the murder of George Floyd, right? This is a company that needed to have its own reckoning and needed to be conscious and open its doors and its own minds and do its work. So I felt like in a way it was like the moment had arrived. I will say that when I came in, he told me that he had 5 years to go, right? So I had brought a slate of like 5 years of like projects and ideas to build. And then like a month later, he was like, I only have 2 years to go. I've changed my mind. And then it was like, oh, let me now condense this. And then once I started, he was like, I have 6 months.
Oh my God.
So it was like, you know, like a scene from Terms of Endearment. And you're like, oh my God. But I also like every time he said that, but by the time he got to the last of 6 months, I said to myself, I'm not gonna reduce this, right? Mm-hmm. I'm gonna just imagine that it's going to continue into new leadership. And listen, this job could end tomorrow. It could end in 6 months, or it could, you know, it could be part of whatever the new transition is, right? But I think you start to plant seeds now. And if we wait, and we know the history of waiting, and we know that not all boards are thinking the way we're thinking, I felt like, yeah, jump in, don't wait. Because if I wait, I have a feeling that I might have not been able to plant the first seeds of this.
Right. To use your own words, because this is something that Jacob also kind of like brings up every so often. When you spoke at Long Wharf Theater's Artistic Congress last fall, you had said that the great pause has become the great possibility. And I think in particular, this very moment, this news, this reckoning that you mentioned, which is not only just happening at Center Theater Group, but, you know, across the country, in every individual, like this pause has allowed for this possibility of planting new seeds, or seeds that have been waiting, quite honestly, to like seize the moment and to like have the opportunity to be seen and to be heard and to flourish into a newfound way of even artistic leadership, like given the fact that you're part of a group of people who have become associate artistic directors, and what it looks like for not necessarily one person to sort of hold the power, but to have it dispersed amongst a diverse group of individuals and allow that to lead the theater into a completely new direction.
But it's not without its drama. I mean, I will say, and to be totally transparent right now, you know, it was Patricia Garza, who I adore, right? And Jesus Reyes. And since this moment has happened, Patricia stepped away, right? And gone on to another job. And Jesus stepped away from the leadership and decided that he was more effective in community partnerships and education. So really, that was like kind of the, for me, what made me, rather than like turn me off, it made me think like, oh, there's a void here. And we got to do something. And I also felt like, you know, one of my partners there is Tyrone Davis, right? And I felt I love Tyrone, right? And I felt like, okay, Tyrone is now with three people who have been there for 15 to 17 years. And it's important to support each other and to get back in there and build it. So I knew that, you know, if two people from our community had pulled out, It's not like I'm walking into something that's like, hey, welcome. It's wonderful, right? But welcome, and there's issues, there's stuff to be dealt with, right? There's work to be done, And I think that was something that made me, rather than turn me off, it actually turned me on, because it made me feel like, you know, like I have this saying, I love this. I don't know if you've ever studied the Joe Chaykin, you know, the presence of the actor, but I use that book a lot because I love that it's also like a personal mantra. And he has all these questions for playwrights in there, even though he was an actor first, right? But one of the things he talks about in terms of the living theater is he says, move towards the thing that needs you the most. And usually the thing that needs you the most, as we think about in our own lives, is that accident, right? That conflict, that tension, right? And wherever it's existing in our lives, the thing that needs me the most is not the thing that's going to feel the best. It's the thing that I have to unpack the most or work through, right? Mm-hmm. So I kind of felt like, okay, move. Where am I moving? And where do I move towards that thing that really needs change? And so this felt like, okay, I see what's going on now. If I'm not going to be destroyed by it, I know that I will be made better because of the experience. And in some ways, it's almost like, you know, relationship, right? It's like, oh, this is a really hard relationship. And, you know, but if we're going to commit to one another, let's really work through our issues, right?
Absolutely. I feel if there's one thing that this pandemic really gave us was a time for reflection and for that healing that needs to happen, and that healing that has to happen both individually and in our communities.
Yeah, I think, you know, by my personal objectives or my personal mantra, it's really that I give myself over to community, right? If I'm going to do community work, in the arms of community, I will be lifted. I will be educated. I will be challenged. All of the things that I need to do to grow as an artist are all going to happen in this very sort of group dynamic, right? So it's never really one-on-one. So I was thinking for myself, the pandemic, when it started, I didn't have a lot of anxiety because I was cradling a lot of students, both undergrads, right, and grad students, and they both had very different issues to take care of. But when you're cradling people who are deep in a clinical depression, that kind of high anxiety, the neutrality, right, also makes you very strong. So my job, and I'm realizing this is a really great approach to have, especially at a place like that's like a big institution, is my job is not to sit there and kind of like listen and then meditate. My job is to listen and then make a choice. So I think a lot about it like art, right? And it's not to make like five intentions, like bad acting intentions, but I have one choice. Let me play that one really well, and then let me move on, right? And that might not be the best choice, but let me move and see how that works, mm-hmm. right? So I think that what's happening right now is because I had this crazy online semester of so much hurt and so much rage, but also so much depression and exhaustion and all of that, you know, being thrown at me, I think what happened is that I got very clear about like, we're going to do this, we're going to do this, we're going to do this. We're getting rid of the syllabi. We're going to start new. I'm not going to bring trauma into the room. We're not going to read these really, really hard plays that are going to trigger you. We're going to do something very, very different. So I think in that same way, when I'm in the room sometimes, or I'm in a meeting, it's about like, let's make a choice, everybody. Let's just make a choice. It might be the wrong choice, but let's make this choice. And let's stick with the choice and let's see how it plays out. But let's not waste time, because we can waste a lot of time. And what I'm learning today, I sent a friend of mine a little like IG meditation that I saw that said, why are we having so many meetings to not make any choices, right? And we can get stuck in that cycle of like, oh my God, I did 8 Zooms yesterday. Right? 8 Zooms. And by the end of the day, all I could get myself to was like the local taqueria, and I had to have a taco, and then I was in bed, right? But it was like, this is not the way to live. This a carnitas taco is not the way to live every day. Even the agua fresca didn't help. And so, you know, I was thinking to myself, it's like, and by the way, agua fresca these days is hilarious, because I had a jamaica and it was with Splenda.
Oh.
Did you know they make jamaicas with Splenda now? It's just, okay, whatever. But anyways, I'm digressing. But it's just to say that, you know, yeah, not all of that cannot save you. You have to, I think it is about, you know, making strong choices right now, knowing where the movement needs to go, where you intuitively, instinctually. I mean, I'm looking at two people who are really wonderful artists that way, right? So just to say that, you know, I love David, like the direction, right? The direction you're going. And Joey, your politics are so, so interesting right now, right? So, but I think that we're making really strong choices in our lives, right? And the choices are really, really important. Self-care, right? How do I move the whole movement forward, right? How do I take the craft into another place? How do I question the things that are not working for us as a community? So in that regard, you know, I feel like I already feel successful. I do feel stymied because I'm in a gigantic institution with a lot of needs and wants. But I will say immediately as I walked in, there was some, there was a hole. There was like a little opening, like it always happens. And I mean, I think of it like in rehearsal, you know, sometimes in rehearsal, there's that like that little thing where you're like, oh, we should try this just because we haven't tried it. And it turns out to be the thing. But I will say without saying the names, there was a little hole and I said, oh, okay, I have a play. And then everybody read the play and then everybody liked the play, right? And then you had a whole process and I kept pushing. I kept pushing very gently because I'm all about diplomacy and ambassadorship, right? That's my thing. I want you all to fall in love with this, not to do it because you have to. And by the end of it, we are opening our Kirk Douglas season with a Latinx play using an all Latinx company, right? And it's about LA and it's a writer from LA and it's a next generation writer who's still in school. So already you can see that if you get that little thing, and then, you know, the second thing I did, because I thought it was important. Once they said, oh, we love this. I was like, oh, here's this other one. Read this one. And then I said, we got to take an option on this for next season. And they were like, oh, we've never done that. Yeah, you can do that. So let's take the option. And we took the option for the next season. So next season, we're guaranteed that we'll do another Latinx play no matter what. So you know what? I think in a way, if you think about it, that every door opening is kind of opportunity to get in there and be ready. Have your plays. Take your plays with you, right? Take the work with you so that you can get everybody excited about the possibility of what is available. That is really, really important.
As we look towards the future of stories that are being told, especially stories that are being told from communities of color, I think there's been a lot of conversation around, you know, not necessarily centering our trauma only, seeing our joy as well. And I'm curious, as someone who is mentoring so many artists and playwrights specifically, and you're in a position now to really impact the stories that are being put out, what, in your opinion, what do you want to see more of? What do you want to see more of from our community? What stories do you think we need to hear?
Well, I'll use the example of the writer's workshop because that's the first thing I took over at Center Theater Group, right? So they said, like, what do you want to do first? I said, give me the writer's group. Give me the writer's group. And the writer's group is this wonderful group that's been around for, you know, 20 plus years. But it's a group usually filled with amazing, amazing writers. A lot who come from New York and go and do cable and TV, right? So it's a place to have a home, right? But for me, I felt it was really important that it reflect Los Angeles right now and it reflect Los Angeles writing, playwriting, specifically theater people, mm-hmm. right? So it couldn't just be about the industry. It had to be about theater people. So the first thing I did is a group of six, and I expanded it to a group of 10, and it is all women. And very intentionally, I started to make a list of all the plays and the writers, mostly, who I didn't know what story they were going to tell, but who I would be very excited to hear from. And as I started to chart it out, a Korean-American writer, a Chinese-American writer, a South Asian writer, a Chicana writer, a Salvadorian, so Central American community in LA mm-hmm. is huge, a Salvadorian writer, right? Three Black writers that represent three very, very different images of Los Angeles. A Native writer, that was really, really important. And all of a sudden, when we started and we had our first meeting, I said, I don't know the story you're going to tell, but it has to be bigger than the story you want to tell right now. Because this is a great opportunity. Take advantage of the resources. And if you want to work on something that you don't know you have permission to, there are some lawyers here who are going to tell you whether you can, you know, if they can get the copyright or not. Like all of that, right? Take advantage of those resources. So in a way, I think the story that I am excited to hear is a story that we don't normally tell because we don't feel we have the permission or we don't have the resource, mm-hmm. right? So here we have the resource. So go big, go epic, And don't worry about number of characters. Don't worry about the two-hander, right? It doesn't have to be about that. It could be about something big. And then the second part of that was to say to the writer, we're going to, in the middle of this, we're doing a retreat. We're going to hire a rep of actors so you can hear it. But more importantly, at the end of this, this is something we never do. We're doing a writer's workshop festival at the Kirk Douglas Theater next summer. Mm. So transparency, transparency, transparency. Let us see the work you're doing. Let the community see the work you're doing. We are, I am merely, and I don't mean to sound this like very Mother Teresa, but I am merely a servant, right, in this process. I am here because these buildings do not belong to the theater. They belong mm-hmm. to the people. We are on county property. We pay $1 a year for 99 years because we have agreed to reflect the diversity of Los Angeles in these stories. So I'm here with a very specific purpose. There's, I'm not like running, you know, doing something that's not intended. I am doing what is intended and the theater has said they intend to do. So this is the way we tell these stories, right? So I would say the story is hard and the story is a difficult story. And I think there's a lot of celebration if you let celebration happen, right? Because we're a lot of times we're not given the permission for imagination. I myself am guilty of that. You know, when I write my Greeks, I feel very, very strongly as a political activist that I have to write about the issues of the day for me, right? So I've written about gangs and I've written about prison culture and I've written about the undocumented. But what would happen if somebody said, you don't have to write about anything other than the sheer joy and imagination you have inside of you? Well, that's different. That's different. That's color, right? And that's real theatricality, and that's really built on imagery. So all of a sudden, I find myself when I give myself permission to do that, I'm doing a collaboration with the puppet company right now. That's different than anything I ever do, right? Speaking to children through puppets about, for me, something very, very important. But I would say that plugs into a different part of my activist brain, right? Because this is activism. Allowing yourself to be expressed in your fullness, in your wholeness, in your spiritualness, in the biggest part of you, right? The holiness of myself, right? Released. And Tazaki Shange said that. The holiness of myself released. That is what I want to offer that next generation artist. To say, listen, you know, you don't have to come with the thing you think we want. What do you want? Because what you want is what we need to represent and to express on this stage, right? That's different. And from a producerial point of view, what if we reverse this and say, listen, you're not here for us. We're here for you, right? In every step of the way. You are a citizen of this. For me, it's about cities, right? So I'm very interested in the regionalism of Center Theater Group because we've ignored the community for so long. So for me, it's really about how do we get back to finding LA, right? And realizing that the great port city, the western edge, right? The Pacific Rim is a story that if you really looked at it in terms of its borders is really rooted in our indigenousness, in our Latino-ness, in our Asian-ness, right? And the other day I was in a staff meeting and somebody said, well, if you could do like a slot, like, you know, if you could do your own slot, what would you do? And I said, well, if I could do my immediate slot, I would do something called The Other Canon. And you know what I would do? I would do a bunch of mini sort of non-production heavy plays that should have been on our stages, but never were. And they would be all Latina, and they would start with Sheree Moraga's Heroes and Saints. And then I would move through Andrea Tomei. I would move through a lot of people who we should have seen on our stages a long time ago. And then I'd move over to Asian American female writing, which is extraordinary in this country. Extraordinary, right? And I'd do that Naomi Izuka play. And I would do that, you know, that Carla Ching play. There's so many. G.A. Park. You can just see, you could see a movement and a history that in our American theater, we haven't actually really played it out in the exceptional, but also historical way that we should, mm-hmm. right? We haven't given it its due. There's a movement happening, people, and nobody knows that it's actually a movement, right? So I love, Tyrone has this great project called Not a Moment, But a Movement. Is that what it is? Yeah. And what I love about it is I love the way that expresses something about all these artists that are in the field right now. And how do we bring that energy together and say, listen, if you looked at it as a community whole, we would see that we have an extraordinary body of work that should be represented, right? You don't have enough slots for it, right? And so I'm a big fan of festivals. I'm a big fan of readings. I'm a big fan of workshops, not because I'm cheap, but I am cheap, but also because I think that if you brought young people to the theater and you said, look, let's start with this play and let's move through Ricardo Bracho and let's move through all these writers, you would see the possibility of what our community is. Mm-hmm. And also you would find your tribe, right? And that's the thing I do all the time in teaching. I say, you know, I have a feeling you might belong to this tribe. And then I give them like three plays, right? And there's always a student who goes, oh my God, of course. And they think they've invented writing. So then you give them like, you know, a play and then they go, oh, somebody already wrote this play, shoot, right? But I think there's something very beautiful about seeing the totality of what we are. And we rarely, rarely get that opportunity. Rarely. Yes. Talking.
I'm just like soaking all of that up. It's like let me tell you, the last 2 days for me have been a little have left me frazzled, but this is like lifting me up right now with all this joy and abundance. I think that's I'm hearing you both talk, and I'm just reflecting on the idea of abundance, and especially thinking producerially, like of course, you know, the pandemic has left us so starved and also almost barren, and it is the moment. We can't waste it. We can't waste the opportunity to have this reckoning and to be relational in order to be transformational, right? And not just like doing the bare minimum or living transaction by transaction. Like, that's not a real relationship, right? It's like, it's looking to each other and saying, how can we support one another and allow that to lead us through into making new decisions and having new leaders and new writers and new artists that are leading us through this movement, not a moment, as you said, of everything that could potentially be possible for the next 30, 40, 50 plus years.
And to take it even farther, Joey, I would say that I feel changed. I am a changed person, right? I mean, it's not surprising to me that in the last 16 months, I went completely gray. I mean, that's like even physically, right? Like, I'm looking at myself and like, I went gray in the last 16 months, but you know, I'm changed as a person. Something happened to me, right? I don't want to go back to what we were before. That what we were before was in erasure. So let us not forget that it wasn't good for us. We were making great strides and lots of great things were happening. And David was at the Magic Theater and having this great time, right? But we could take it even farther, right? So just to say that what I feel like what changed in me was very clearly, I wasn't going to accept the way the theater was playing out now. So, and in that way, I lost a few commissions and I had some hard conversations, but I also had really honest engagements, right? And that is shifting and changing the way that I see the world. So something that just happened to me very, very clearly was, I was, you know, when you're in a university, it's like, it's a bureaucratic nightmare, right? It is really it's a rabbit hole, right? And then one of the things I said to my own dean was, I'm not sitting on these small committees anymore. I'm not sitting on these committees where nothing gets done. Can you get me in like on a big university committee? So I sat on the highest at the president's level diversity committee this year, and we were able to make real substantial, we need to hire 100 POC professors right now. And if we don't do that, we're going to protest. Right. Like then I started to see that the power, and maybe what it did to me was it gave me also the incentive to call Michael Ritchie and say, Michael, things are not good. This is not healthy. The theater is not in a good place. So I would never say that because I respect the man and say what you will. You know, he's been very kind to me and I didn't need to be I didn't need to be a bad person to him, right? I just needed, I can't believe I'm editing my bad words. But I could say in kindness and in generosity and in community, my friend, my white friend, it's not good. Mm-hmm. So, and my white friend said, if it's not good, come and tell me what you're going to do about it. Right. So I think that's really, really important. That only happens because I changed something deep inside of me in the way I see the world, in the way I want to live in the world, the way I want to move through the world. I caretake my mother who has dementia. Right. And everything is very in the moment, very immediate. Why am I not treating my art that way? Why am I not treating my art moment to moment? That's changing the way I'm writing. It's changing the way I'm getting produced, the way I'm performing, the way I'm the way I'm attacking the work. Oh my God, let us be changed. Let us be changed by the moment enough to know that it only empowers us and moves us to another place. And that only happens in community. And I was just thinking when I said this thing about the magic, you know, Sean San Jose and I are really, really good friends. So every day he's like, girl, what's going on, right? And you know, there's this moment with Sean. But what I love about it is that I feel like we can all support each other, right? And we can keep adding to the leadership in the community and saying to people, how can I help? How can I help you? What do you need? What do you need? Right? And that's really, really important to say that to somebody. And today, Joey, when I saw your Facebook, it was like, what did you say? I'm almost over it or whatever.
I've reached my limit.
I put a heart, but I was going to say, like, what do you need? Seriously, right? I think we can do that for each other, right? There's ways. What I learned this year with Victory Gardens, for instance, right? When all the writers resigned, there are ways to work, but that only worked because all the writers decided that we were going to step down together, and it made enough of an impact that it shifted and changed the way that theater was going to do its work, right? That's important. It makes me think a lot about production, and I don't know if you feel this way, but after every show, you know, I get that little post-show depression, you know, where I'm like, I miss my family, or, you know, we connected so deeply. But I know that one of the cruelties, but also the joys of theater is you make a family and then you have to say goodbye to that family in order to start the next project. And if you don't leave that thing behind, you can't move on to the next thing, right? So what I keep thinking about is this expansion, or this notion of what community is, gets more and more beautiful the longer you stay in it. So a lot of times I say to my students, just stick it long enough to see that you will grow something. You will grow your tribe, and it'll be big enough to not only carry you, but for you to lead it, or for you to follow. Because a lot of times in our movement, you just need to follow, right? You just need to support. But I think that's really, really important. And I keep reminding myself, right, in these moments of real struggle, or when things are really, really hard, don't forget, this is what we do with the play all the time. If you stayed in the world of the last play, you just wouldn't be good for the next play. Mm-hmm. You have to start new. Mm-hmm. And it's so hard. It's kind of almost... it's almost very, very, I don't know, I think of the word as cruel because I love everybody so much, and I always fall in love with everybody in a play, right? That's, I think, as a writer, you have to fall in love literally with everybody. But I think it's true. Then you move on to another relationship. And I think that's the way we grow. We grow as artists. And hopefully every relationship takes you to a new vibration, a new idea, right? And I don't know, I just keep thinking that's our politics these days. And rather than, I don't know, maybe we started like 16 months ago, I was watching us really attack each other a lot and destroy each other a lot. And maybe we were acting out, or we were self-sabotaging, but also we were calling people out for very real things. But maybe what I'm seeing now is that maybe we've been through it, and we're saying, I understand now that when I go into a building like the one I go into, it's not about the people. It is about the structure. I'm really interested in architecture. And the reason I say that is I want to dismantle the system and the structure the way it is. Mm-hmm. The people, I believe everybody is intentionally wanting to do their best work. Even if I feel like they're being, you know, like if they're actually not helping me, right? But I feel like the people are one thing. It is the system that I have to try to take down. Right. Yeah. And how do I do that? And I think it is about looking at it and realizing where the power comes from and how it gets administered and who's in charge of this and who's in charge of that and la, 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 la. So, you know, I'm doing like my first week, it was just like sitting there and becoming friends with everybody, right? Mm-hmm. And if it was physical, I would have been bringing in like donut holes and stuff like that, right? But because it's on Zoom,
right.
You're like, you're just listening and being kind, empathy and compassion. Mm-hmm. I know that those are not always popular words, empathy and compassion. I have some real awful people in my neighborhood and in my surroundings that don't share my same political values, right? Empathy and compassion. I have to do something to change you in some way without wasting all my energy, because I'm going to need you to join me and help me mm-hmm. and make this a better thing, right?
Right.
And so I think no movement lives on its own. It really is in the collective building together, right? It's in reaching across the aisle. It's in you know, looking at the other communities that are suffering and trying to help them out too, right? So that is always the thing. So I said to the writers the first day, I said, let's just take a beautiful look in this room and see who's here. Now let's take a moment to see who's not here, because that's a tragedy. Mm-hmm. Who is not in our room right now? So if we are in Los Angeles and we're not representing the Central American community, I have failed, right? I need to do better, right? To not include the Middle Eastern community, I need to do better, right? I need to find those writers. I need to find the work, and I need to keep unpacking and expanding so that we keep including people into this mix. But I thought it was such a good moment, because you feel like I felt like so successful in that I brought together 10 women writers, right? But also, that's not enough, right? Because I have to look at the community and say, you know, Armenian writers, right? Persian writers, mm-hmm. there are so many great writers. I have to do that work, or I have to allow that generation and that community to take that space, right? I don't always have to do that work, but I have to make the space for that work to happen. Right.
Absolutely.
That's the hard part. That's the hard part.
Yeah, it's difficult. But like you said, and what we've been reiterating over the course of this conversation, you know, as we start to kind of wrap up here, man, 45 minutes goes by really fast. But this shift on how we start to focus from a culture of like production or productivity and prioritizing that, and switching it over to a culture of care and prioritizing what does it mean to care for you? Like you said, like you were saying, It may seem small, but looking at someone and saying, what do you need? What do you need to feel successful? What do you need to feel like you're thriving in this experience? If you're a playwright, you know, like a playwright being approached by an institution, or a producer approaching a director to start talking about a new project or something. It's like, what do you need? How are we going to, and establishing those values, seeing like what values are shared amongst yourselves. So that way you have this like common language, and you start to like, And you're feeding into the relationship, which then allows for the work to thrive and for it to breathe easily and not feel so constrained by the systems that continue to try to like oppress us, essentially, and keep us boxed in into what it means to be a Mexican writer, what it means to be a queer writer, and, you know, and all the intersections of any sort of identities, you know, and allow that to be expansive and abundant and full of joy and imaginative, and not be rooted in stereotypes. You know, that I think we're done with that. We're over it.
and we go, and you know what's so amazing about this? We go back to I go back to my youth. Tú eres mi otro yo. You are the other me. When David does well, I do well, right? When Joey does well, I do well. We do well. We all do well. When we are able to celebrate each other's successes and achievements and accomplishments in this way, we're all building a communal experience that's better for everybody. But that's a concept I learned when I was a kid. Why did I let go of that concept? Right? It's exactly the most essential concept that I need right now in the world, right? Tú eres mi otro yo. You are the other me. Yes, that shifts and changes and gets rid of ego and gets rid of all the craziness that sometimes happens in our community, right? Because you're right. It can be very, very scarce. But the truth is, it doesn't have to be. Right? My newest kind of like politics, I'll just reveal this because why not? You know, I sat in a meeting the other day. I said, why do we go after the same 20 people? And everybody was like, why are we going after the same 20 people? Let's not do that. Right. And I think it was one of those moments where people were like, oh, right? Because there are so many great artists in this country, right? It's not for lack. It is because we haven't done the work to allow and to create the space for that kind of expression to happen. And when a great young writer, enters a room, as I said to a writer the other day who was still in school, I said, "You're a poet. You're ready to be produced. I can't wait for you to graduate. I can't wait for you to start doing your work professionally." We have to make that space because the talent has arrived. The poet, the storyteller has entered the room. Let us not deny that person just because that's not a person who is in a New York or LA or one of the hotspots, right? But that's really important to always remember. So yeah, I mean, oh my goodness. I can't believe we've had this amazing conversation. I feel, I mean, like, I'm like, I drank all my McDonald's coffee. What am I going to do? Oh my God, we are all healers, right? I mean, if we can, I sound corny, I feel corny saying it, but what if we are actually these storytellers that we are, right, in the theater? What if actually the job we have to do in our community is to heal our community? We are healers. That's a different approach, right? Already we feel different about how we do the work. So maybe that's the thing I'm going to walk out with today. Let me just heal, right? Let me do the process. Let me do the work of healing, and that will just dictate how I start to make the art.
Louise, thank you so, so much for taking the time to chat with us today. We really appreciate it.
I am so happy to be on Zencaster. Look, I'm doing this.
Right, get fancy. You know, we're upgrading here. You know, only the best.
What a pleasure to be in the room with the both of you. You're both amazing human beings, and I just love what's happening to the both of you too. And just to acknowledge your growth and just the work you're doing. And when I first met the both of you, we were very different people. And just to say that there are beautiful markers, right? And let's acknowledge it in our lives because you're in different places. You've changed in a beautiful way. So bless you.
Thank you. Thank you. Bless you.
Thank you. We will see each other soon.
Absolutely. All right. Thank you for joining us. Bye. Hi, everyone. Welcome back. We've just wrapped up our incredible, lovely interview with the incredible and lovely Louise Alfaro. Oh, my gosh.
Mind blown. Just so inspired. Like, I want to go out and just dig into my imagination, the permission that he has given all of us to go deep into the imagination, to dream bigger. I mean, right now, I mean, what a gift. I think so often artists, especially artists of color, you know, and queer artists of color, you know, we package ourselves, we box ourselves in, we make ourselves small and palatable and just producible. And we're like, please accept us for however you can. And, you know, the times are changing and, you know, fuck that. and to Louise's permission, you know, just dream bigger than the story that you wanted to say today. Like, that kind of leadership, that kind of inspiration. I'm so excited to see the ripple effect of what that will bring. And I'm so excited to have that permission for myself as an artist to dream bigger than I ever thought I could. So that's really what I'm leaving with and sort of sitting with right now.
Absolutely. And just to continue to reflect on the idea of the great possibility, like, we are here, we are in that moment. You know, we were kind of saying earlier, talking about the difference it is recording now than it was a year ago, and talking to our artists from season 2 and how it was like, how are we sitting in this moment? What are we hoping for? What are we like hoping to change when we do start to get back into business? And we're here, we're at that moment. You know, there's all these new appointments, all these season announcements that are being made, and we're starting to see that shift. And so, you know, and not just like the optics of things, but also people keeping up with their accountability reports. People, you know, some, not all, but some, you know, holding true to like not only saying we're going to hire more people of color, we're going to center BIPOC artists in our seasons and whatnot, but also like taking the initiative to allocate their budgets accordingly and to provide the care to the artists, whatever that means. If you have an artist who's a parent, and how much of a difference it makes for the institution, the theater, to provide like a child care stipend, you know, so it's not the burden of the artist to carry, and they can not worry about that and just go and do great work and have a great show go up.
Absolutely.
You know, things like that, that may seem small, but make a world of a difference.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it just makes me think, you know, like, and I've been saying this, you know, I've been saying this with my partner, I've been saying this in gatherings with theater folks, I've been saying this in general, you know, the change, you know, doesn't solely come from talking, it comes from action, saying this is what we're going to do, we're going to change this, we're going to change that. But when you're not practicing it, it's easier to make these declaratives, you know, and it's a lot harder once you're in it. Now, this is the moment that we really see, I think what you're saying, where the rubber meets the road, you know, where we're seeing like, how are you holding yourselves accountable? How are you making that transformational change in your actions, not just in your words, not just in optics, but that transformational change. What happens when you're a real resource? How are you putting that into care? You know, and I think this is where we're really beginning to see that transformational action take place or not take place. Do you know what I mean? And be called out. And I think what we've all realized is that we are stronger together in this time we've gotten to speak to each other, in this time that we've gotten to really connect in a moment where we felt so disconnected. We realize, oh, when we come together, when we fight for what's right, we fight for what's just right, for the liberation for all of us together, we can really see that change happen, not hypothetically in a statement or in a performative action, but in real transformational change and action, daily action every day. And so I'm really excited. You know, we have a historic season coming up. We've, like you said, we've got all these new appointments. We've got all this surface change. And I'm excited to see how those become seeds that are planted and what's new to bloom for this field. You know, we've gotten so much advice, with so much great advocacy and guiding lights, you know, and now is the time to really, you know, we've read them, but now is the time to really sit with them, to listen to them, to enact them, to enact that change, and to see, you know, what is possible actually.
Yes. And deepening of our relationships with one another. I think that's
absolutely,
that's how things end up being transformational, is like developing those relationships. And when conflict arises, you know, leaning into that and rather than recoiling and feeling like you're in absence of something, you're losing something, you're actually gaining a lot out of being able to address conflict within yourself, within amongst your communities. If you're an institution, allowing people to let you know what they need from you in order for this to be successful and transformational, and following through with that. And like, that's what's really going to like make such a huge difference as we continue to move forward. And, you know, keep our fingers crossed for the best. thank you all so much for joining us on this premiere episode. We have such a season in store for you. We have guests coming on the rise. Some guests we don't even know yet, but they're going to be here. It's going to be good. But actually, like, hopefully by the time this airs, all of that will be sorted out. You know, these things come and go, and yeah. You know, time is relevant. but yes, stay tuned. Make sure you're subscribed wherever you're listening to your podcast. And we will see you next time. Thanks all. Thank you for listening to Soul Talk. Soul Talk is a branch of the Soul Project, a national theater initiative dedicated to producing the work of Latinx playwrights in New York City and beyond. Co-hosted by David Mendizabal and Joey Reyes. Edited by Iris Zacarias. You can follow us at www.soulproject.org, on Instagram and Twitter at Soul Project NYC, and on Facebook at The Soul Project. Thank you for listening.